Hi everyone, I'm Kate and this is Carla, your trends expert at Box Clever. Welcome to our new Soapbox podcast series revisiting our cost of living trends report.
So the trend we're looking at today is joyful distractions, and this trend speaks to the consumer need for more joy and comfort during the cost of living crisis.
So we're joined today by Chrissy and Lauren, who are research directors at Box Clever. Hi both, thank you for joining us on the podcast episode today. We'd like to ask you, first and foremost, you know, where have you seen this trend of joyful distractions playing out in the real world?
The interesting thing about joyful distraction is probably that I think it supersedes the cost of living crisis. I think actually we were seeing signs of joyful distraction all the way back through with COVID when we were all really isolated. You know, there was a lot of talk about the impact of that isolation on mental health. Mm-hmm. And I think people started looking for something to bring themselves like a little bit of joy in the world. And that's kind of continued through in these like really disruptive years where we've gone from a couple of years of COVID, ruined Christmases, all the way through to then a cost of living crisis. And now I feel like that's still continuing, and a bit of political unrest as well, kind of on top of that. So I think it's been something that's been bubbling away for quite a while. And then in terms of the way we're seeing that present, I think one of the easiest examples is probably the lipstick effect. It's the one that all brands kind of reach towards because it's just something that we've heard of before and we can then translate it through to other things.
Yeah, I feel like the to give a bit of detail, I don't know if it was something that ever got actually like proved as like a proper phenomenon, but when it started, I think it dates back to like the Great Depression. It's like this idea that during these times of economic and just general uncertainty, people strip back a lot of those massive luxuries. So like your holidays, you might delay buying a car, but I think people still need something to get them through the day and make them feel good about themselves. So at the time, people said that sales of lipstick would rise during times of uncertainty. So it's all about that kind of, you're stripping back those really larger luxuries and, you know, like I say, not buying your holidays or whatever, but you might go out and buy yourself a little treat or a dine-in deal or something like that. And I feel like that's something that's we've seen come up a lot research-wise, just kind of this change in behaviour. And as Lauren said, I feel like COVID really set us up quite well for that because people have almost had this warm-up to not being able to go out to restaurants, not being able to go get their nails done, that kind of thing. And they've taught themselves how to kind of cover that ground themselves in a way that's slightly more cost effective and a bit more DIY. But then obviously when the cost of living crisis hits, that we're in a perfect position, like as consumers, to then just keep that going and just strip back those necessities, but keep these small little luxuries that make us feel good about ourselves.
Yeah, I think another really good example of that that isn't necessarily cost of living would be like the avocado toast phenomenon, which we saw obviously.
That mean that none of us can get a house.
Yeah, like no one can get a house after the recession, but the millennial thing to do was go and sort of treat yourself to avocado and toast. But then obviously that became synonymous with like a spoiled generation. But yeah, exactly, like that idea of treating yourself in times of stress and when you can't afford those big luxuries is definitely something that we talk about in the report as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's those little bits, like not going to a restaurant, getting a dine-in deal. There were sales. I was reading a few reports about like unusual kind of areas that have been on the rise. So things like air fryers are really on the rise. But again, that feeds into not going to restaurants as much. Things like kits for DIY, like doing your own nails, that kind of thing, are all on the rise. And that's just people not wanting to give up those essential little luxuries that make themselves feel good. But also like feeding themselves a bit of, I guess, comfort in that way. And another thing that we see crop up quite a lot is this idea of nostalgia. So the idea of just doing bits to make yourself feel a bit more like secure, and it's comforting and it's safe. An obvious example of that is chocolate sales. So during COVID, they just went absolutely through the roof. That kind of thing, confectionery, we tend to see that a lot, and people craving those kind of, particularly a lot of like childhood kind of little things that they might have had, things that seem quite homey and reassuring, again, feeds into that as well.
Yeah, there's lots of nostalgia examples. Carly, you might be able to share some as well, but I think the two things that came through for me writing this report, and then since we've kind of published it as well, was Cadbury's have got the 200th anniversary of like them establishing themselves and kind of, I guess, feeding the nation sugar, essentially. But that idea that they've been there for like 200 years is really, they're playing that back in advertising at the moment, and they're kind of bringing back like retro packaging as well. Again, at a time where everyone is looking for that kind of comfort and familiarity. And then McDonald's in the US have kind of come up with a drinks only nostalgic position in the market, which is based on like an old, do you remember the McDonald's, like Ronald McDonald and his little crew? Yeah. It's based on one of those characters from, I think, the 80s. And it's all about, you know, like this nostalgic drive-through experience, and all the drinks are like really retro and fun. And again, it's just about bringing that joy to everyday lives.
Bringing like an extra level on top of the additional, like you're getting your food or your drink. It's just that extra level of like niceness.
Yeah.
A bit of a treat.
Yeah, exactly. A bit of a treat.
Yeah. See, I think my nostalgia presented like quite differently, because so I got back into gaming once like kind of COVID hit. I was really hyper aware that I'd gone from, I mean, at the time I was living in London. So I'd gone from like going out every night and being around so many people all the time to absolutely nothing. And then the Halo Master Chief Collection got released on Game Pass. And it just became this a perfect opportunity to connect with people that were my friends and that I'd see daily, but in a more virtual world, because obviously we couldn't just go out and hang out with these people anymore. And for me, that game in particular, I used to play that with my dad when I was like 11, 12. So it was like returning to something that was really, really comforting, but at the same time, getting that social relationship with people. Because otherwise, I think I'd have just stayed in my bedroom and watched reruns of RuPaul's Drag Race, and, you know, everything would have gone to pot. It was just a really nice way of kind of centering yourself and not spending a lot of money with it, but, you know, having something to focus on other than the way that the world was going. And that's definitely something that has continued through the cost of living. And even now, if anything, I game even more. It's become like a part-time job. So it's less of a joyful distraction now. It's actually quite stressful. But there's just something about being able to relatively cheaply connect with people from all around the world and kind of, you know, understand things from their perspective. You're all kind of in there for the same kind of reasons. You're all kind of like-minded as well. So, yeah, it's just a really nice kind of way of like dialing down the stress of, yeah, oh my God, all of these things are happening in the world. I need a distraction and something completely virtual.
Yeah.
That having said that, I hope I don't get cancelled for this, but like I've not seen any good gaming research. Like, and I've taken part in it. I've seen reports. I've worked on some gaming style projects, and I've never seen a brand or a business hit that sweet spot in terms of being able to find that niche of people that they're not doing it to be competitive. They're not gaming because of esports. They're also not the cozy gamer either, that's, you know, sitting alone in their bedroom and wanting to play Animal Crossing or something really chilled. There's a group in the middle that always seems to get missed, which is people just having a collective goal and wanting to work together in something whilst, you know, having a human connection where it's not always been completely possible to have that.
Do you know what? I feel like it's not even the actual, sometimes the gaming aspect as well. Because I remember we did, and I wasn't involved in this project, but like research years ago. And it was to do with like Twitch streaming and people who like follow. So they're not actually like playing the game. They're just watching somebody else like play whatever video game it is that they're interested in. And there were a lot of like attitudinal statements within the research and people saying like, there was like a bit of a flag I remember coming through for people saying, oh, I feel like this Twitch streamer is like almost like a friend to me as well, which I thought, oh gosh, like, especially during, like you say, times of COVID or when people can't get out as much or people who might find it harder or people are dispersed location wise, it provides a sense of community. I know loads of people who like finish from work at like the end of the day and they're like super stressed or whatever, and then it's just nice to be able to go and play a video game, and they'll do that above going out to the pub or whatever, which is more
I
my
feel
speed.
Very attacked. Yeah.
there's nothing wrong with it, like I say, it's like a mechanism that allows you to have that joyful distraction or the distraction from your life that kind of you can accommodate during the cost of living crisis, which is like, you know, not the same if you're going out for a meal or whatever, you might not be able to afford to do that. Sorry, Carly, you
definitely
were gonna say
no. I just think it's really interesting that it's such an important thing for so many people, and we've seen, I think we talked about in the report, how the gaming market has just been booming for the last few years, presumably because of the things we've just talked about, and that sort of sense of community, releasing stress. Interesting that no brands have really been able to tap into that. I think I remember Pringles did a campaign at some point sort of around mental health and gaming, which was quite interesting.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to think if there are any other brands that have kind of tapped in, or if you think there are sort of big opportunities there for brands, and which brands you think could be moving into that space.
Yeah, I think there's always a tendency to reach for the esport gamers. And I think, you know, it can be quite a smart decision in terms of the fact that it is the most lucrative, arguably. There's loads of people on Fortnite. There's loads of people on COD. They are kind of the most popular games. But there's also, and like I said previously, there's these other pockets of gaming, and there's no brands tapping into those really. So, for instance, a more collaborative game where you're all playing together for a like-minded goal, you're not against each other, it's not a sport per se, it's just something to kind of be more relaxed about. And there are so many games out there that are kind of, that is at their essence. So you've got things like Assassin's Creed, Destiny 2, they're all quite, you know, more isolated games, I guess, in a way, a lot less competitive. And there's no brands actually like leveraging that. You don't see any kind of brands collaborating with these kinds of games, but you'd always see them reach for a Fortnite style game. And I think maybe there's a brand that could step up into that space and sort of say, actually, it's not that serious, guys. Like, you don't have to be like at each other's throats arguing over Twitch on you know, who's your favorite PvP player. It can be something like, you know, do you want to just chill out and de-stress? I'm going to work with this brand and you can get, you know, this kind of merch or have an opportunity to win an experience with this game. It doesn't have to be all about kind of the cutthroat side of gaming.
And that's obviously really important, because in a cost of living crisis where people are feeling stressed about their finances, they need a proper outlet and escape from that rather than going into like a really high pressured competitive environment.
Cool. So that's all really interesting. We're also wondering what you've seen in terms of clients or projects or things happening within the research world that sort of point to this trend.
I feel like there's a lot of interest in how to leverage those opportunities. So that area of gaming that Lauren's mentioned, the feeling of nostalgia and this idea of the lipstick effect, like how as a brand would you go about kind of tackling that in a way that's beneficial, especially thinking now about the lipstick effect. If you're a brand that's incredibly premium and the problem is that people just aren't, for example, like really expensive designer clothes, if people just aren't buying that at the moment because they're cutting back, how can you make yourselves more affordable without diluting your brand image? So without like actually properly reducing the costs. So something that I think is quite interesting that I've seen a fair amount of recently is larger brands doing collaborations with something that's slightly more affordable. So it avoids having to, as I say, kind of not damage, but change their current brand image as being premium. So H&M do a lot of this. They collaborate quite a lot with like big, they did like Alexander Wang. They did, who was it? Kurt Lagerfeld we were talking about.
Karl Lagerfeld.
This is Stella McCartney as well, I think.
Yeah, Versace as well. They've done absolutely loads. And I think that's like a prime example of some of those big brands finding a way to be more approachable. There was another one that I know about because I bought it. It was the, you know, Omega Watches. They did a collaboration with Swatch that was like a lot more affordable, and they launched it around Father's Day. I just remember because I bought one for my dad, and that's just, again, another really nice example of a luxury brand finding a way around making themselves more affordable but still protecting that brand image.
Yeah, that's a really good example. So in essence, it's about giving consumers that little sort of touch of luxury but still at an affordable price point, something that's still accessible as well. That's really interesting.
It's like a hard balance to find, I feel. Yeah. And then for the nostalgia, when it comes to nostalgia, I think that's something you have to be a little bit careful about. I think it's a really good opportunity. And you saw a lot of, do you remember seeing the Tesco advert around Christmas? I mean, there's always quite nostalgic adverts around Christmas, and they brought in Buddy the Elf. Do you remember that one? Well, they brought it back in. And I thought that was like a really good example of just like evoking kind of things that are familiar to people in childhood. Although I have seen it done really, really badly. There was like a Subway advert years and years ago that I always think about, that it's like 2 minutes long, and it's like this really emotional, like violins playing, going through like this child being born to growing up to going to university and like making decisions and meeting his wife and all of this kind of thing. And then it's like, oh, you know, in life you make these choices. And then he goes into the shop, and it's a Subway, and he's like picking what sandwich toppings he wanted. And everyone was like, what is this about? So like, you've got to be careful with it. You can't just like put it in anywhere or try and kind of squeeze it in. It has to feel appropriate.
Yeah. And I think the Christmas one for Tesco, going back to that point, I think where those kind of big supermarkets and I guess like John Lewis, for example, at Christmas have done well with that is because Christmas is obviously such a time of excess and consumption. And I think, you know, quite rightly, people, I think there was an ad, maybe the start of the cost of living, which was like a table full of, it might have been like Asda or something, maybe not Asda, I think, I can't remember which one it was, but it was like a table full of food, and it was like totally like excessive. And I remember that getting pushed back because people were saying, you know, not everyone's going to be able to afford that. I think it was after COVID as well, which obviously people had this idea of trying to get that Christmas back but couldn't afford it necessarily. And I think quite rightly, brands are starting to play a little bit safer now and talk about what are those things at Christmas that make Christmas what it is, the nostalgia around it, the kind of small like moments that you have rather than this big excessive
feast. I work on a few Christmassy projects kind of around how, I guess, how to drive people choosing them as a place for their Christmas gift. And I think there is a real awareness that it's been a really turbulent time around Christmas in particular. I mean, we did have that awful cancelled Christmas, and again, going into the cost of living after that. And what we're seeing is that the equilibrium hasn't quite balanced out yet. There is a need for something that is price effective for people. So that doesn't necessarily mean the cheapest item. It just means that it has to fit within their budget that they've allocated for Christmas, because in actual fact, Christmas became not an anomaly, but a bit more of an exception, in that people didn't want to come across as being really, really cheap. They weren't trying to do things. They had more of a budget, I guess. So they didn't look cheap to their friends if they gave them, you know, a little stocking filler for Christmas. But because part of that was the feelings that were underpinning it, they wanted to give people something that was thoughtful, something that was a bit more unique. There was a lot of trends around like personalization and things like that. So, you know, I guess it's just about people being conscious of the perceptions that they're giving when they're gift giving. It has to be, I guess it's that lipstick effect again. It has to be something that feels like a little bit of luxury, or feels like that little slice of Christmas that they're getting back, even though times are hard. They might not be able to afford the most luxurious thing, but they want to look like they're giving something.
I think there's a lot of leaning into that kind of trying to take pressure off people, especially during those periods, like to the example that you gave, Kate. Haribo ran a really nice campaign around Christmas that was just saying about Christmas is about like the mistakes and like the messes and the spills and stuff like that. And there was like really no mention of presents or anything like that. It's about, it's those like little moments that at the time might be a bit annoying, but when you look back on it, it's something that you like kind of cherish because it's when your kids were younger and that kind of thing. And that's something that I think evokes nostalgia really, really well. And I think that as a brand, Haribo great for doing that, generally speaking, because a lot of consumers will have had Haribo when they were younger. So it's really easy for them to play into that space of like evoking that kind of feel of childhood and security and that kind of thing as well.
Yeah. So there's a lot of kind of playing on emotions, isn't there, in this, in this trend. It's all about making people feel comforted, taking away stress.
Yeah, I feel like it's because it's the cost of living crisis. There's just a lot of interesting consumer psychology that comes out of it, where you see these behaviors happen that are just like, feel like at first glance, not very intuitive, because it's not people behaving in a factual way. Like, it doesn't make sense. For example, during times of massive economic uncertainty, that sales of lipstick would rise. But it's like, I say, people kind of find a way to make these situations work for them. And that's why you see these like little niche trends coming out as well.
Thanks both. That's been really interesting. We've got a final question for you today before we wrap up. And that is just thinking about everything we've talked about today. So nostalgia was a big theme, obviously, sort of escapism and switching off via gaming, and then those little luxuries. What would you say are the kind of key takeouts for clients who want to sort of navigate this trend in 2024 and beyond?
I'd say one important thing, especially when you're looking at your consumers, don't look at them as a whole. They're actually, you know, little pockets of people or individual segments of people, I guess, that will behave differently because they have different attitudes and behaviours and perceptions of the world. And just because you don't think that that is your customer doesn't mean that they don't exist. So don't put all your eggs in one basket, and don't ignore kind of the other spectrum of people that exist out there, because you might find that actually there's some low-hanging fruit that you could tap into as a potential consumer who might actually like really appreciate that and become a loyal customer at the end of it.
I would say probably about, you have to kind of navigate those, this kind of terrain with real sensitivity, which also might feel a bit strange because we're talking about joyful distractions and it's very nice and, you know, kind of just those nice bits and bobs. But the underlying element of it is that kind of security, the niceness, the nostalgia, making people feel good about themselves. And I think you have to be very careful to make sure that we're being sensitive to customers and considerate. And if we're trying to evoke nostalgia or make them feel good about themselves, there are ways that it can backfire slightly. So you have to be really, really mindful of what the customer is like looking for, and just how you can make them feel good without making them feel bad about, you know, stripping back other like important purchases for them as well.
Yeah. So it's kind of thinking about that underlying need, you know, what does joy and escapism and nostalgia look like within that category as well, and that type of consumer? And like to your point, Lauren, people are then different within the different segments of consumers as well. What is escapism or joy to one person might be different to another. So thinking about that. Great. Well, thank you both for coming in and for talking to us about our trend, Joyful Distractions. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having us.
Oh, that was synchronous.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast episode. If you haven't downloaded it already, you can access our cost of living trends report by scanning the QR code on screen.
And if you'd like to speak to either of us or any of our guests about the trends that we've covered in the podcast, then please get in touch by the email address.
And that's everything from us. Thank you for listening.